Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Buckeye Extra Football Podcast. I'm Joey Kaufman. I'm joined by my co-host, Bill Rabinowitz, Rob Aller. We are...
And Grandma Aller. Don't forget Grandma Aller.
Grandma O is...
She's in the background.
We'll see if she has any comment on the...
She picked Michigan to beat Ohio State, by the way. She's in the Vegas connection.
But she is optimistic, supposedly. The rumor mill has it. She's optimistic about Ohio State's chances to get in the playoff.
This is correct.
Are you guys optimistic? I guess we should we'll cut to the news. We'll cut to why we are recording the podcast. Ohio State is fifth in the second to last college football playoff rankings that were released Tuesday night. They dropped from number two. So they are now behind the three unbeatens in USC. They are in order Georgia 1, Michigan 2, TCU 3, USC 4. The Buckeyes are at number 5 ahead of Alabama. So they lived another week, and they will root for chaos this weekend to make the college football playoff. Maybe not even that much chaos, but they certainly need a few games, maybe even just one game, to go their way.
It's pretty simple, actually. I mean, the key yesterday, and we expected this, but it did happen, that Ohio State would be ahead of Alabama. That was the one thing that would doom Ohio State, because neither team plays anymore, so there's no reason to think that whoever, you know, that's going to change. USC loses. I think Ohio State's in. I'm skeptical about Utah's chances. I know Utah beat them in October, but Utah's a little banged up now, and USC is not the same team they were then. Caleb Williams is going to win the Heisman. If you watch him against Notre Dame, he's fantastic. Now, they could, you know, Utah is a good team. Anything could happen, but I'm really surprised it's essentially a toss-up game, according to the odds makers. And then if TCU gets blown out by Kansas State, I think Ohio State's probably in, but I think it would take that. I don't think a narrow loss would do it for Ohio State. But Kansas State's playing pretty well.
I think TCU's in, because otherwise that becomes a scenario that, not unlike 2014, except TCU won big in 2014 and still didn't get in. They got jumped by Ohio State, which – you know, TCU fans have some argument there. I mean, Ohio State won big and dominated Wisconsin, but TCU won big and dominated. But regardless of that, I think there's long memories. Bill and I probably disagree on this, but I think there is a political element to the College Football Selection Committee. And I think that there is a sense maybe of owing, to all things being equal or close to equal, TCU they feel like they owe them. So I think the Horned Frogs are in. They have the toughest schedule. They're of the four teams, they have the strongest strength of schedule. So that's a big thing. They're playing the number what's Kansas State?
Nine.
10?
Nine.
10?
I think they're 9.
10.
I think they're 10.
Oh, they're 10.
So it's not like they're playing some unranked team. They're playing a top 10 team. Yeah, a blowout. I don't even know what a blowout looks like. Two touchdowns, three touchdowns.
Yeah, two touchdowns or more.
It would have to be some monster thing. So I think TCU's in. I'm in the minority on this, although it is looking increasingly like a USC loss almost guarantees the Buckeyes in. But I read something today that, you know, if it like goes to overtime and SC loses like on a field goal, I've seen the committee do weird things enough times to just not guarantee anything. I mean, yeah, it seems pretty clear that a two loss team, which has never made it, if SC loses, wouldn't have a shot. But you know, they have Caleb Williams. He's marketable. I don't know. I think Ohio State's in, but I wouldn't guarantee it.
Yeah, I think if you're an Ohio State fan and you're watching games this weekend, the safest scenario would be for USC to lose, because as you said, Rob, the selection committee has never put a two-loss team in the college football playoff. They would be breaking with precedent. And I think the committee changes from year to year. The committee can be hard to read. The committee really can do whatever it wants. But one thing the committee has always done is they've loss counted. They've looked to us the best records and which team has one loss, which team is undefeated, and then you typically pick from that pool, and usually there are enough. And USC having two losses, I think, would make it difficult for them to crack the field. So that's where I stand with USC. And they would have two losses to the same team. And I think the optics of that are not great. TCU, I think, is a more interesting case if they lose to Kansas State, because they would, as you said, one loss for them and one loss for USC, and they would have one more win.
I asked Boo, can't help but say, you know, Boo Corrigan, on the conference call last night, you know, two questions. One was about recency bias, which hurts Ohio State. I mean, that's the last impression. That's the strongest impression. How much do they guard against that? And he said they do. That's part of the conversation. You know, if you were to flip-flop, let's say Ohio State loses to Michigan in October instead of now, I don't think that loss looks horrible. It's the last impression. It's a terrible impression. The other question that I asked him was, how did they view that game? Did they view it more as this was a 45-23 rout, or that this was actually a very close game until the middle of the fourth quarter, then it got away from Ohio State? And his answer was basically more of that than the rout, but they can't dismiss the fact that it got out of hand. So I think overall his answer was encouraging to Ohio State as in terms of it's not disqualifying like the Iowa or Purdue losses were a few years ago. Michigan is, you know, top two team, and it was a close game for most of the way. Ohio State outplayed them in the first half. Not that it did them any good. But it wasn't like, you know, they were outclassed by Michigan until the end. I mean, the end got away from them.
I think one thing that's so typical of the college football playoff selection is, Bill, the answer that he gave to your question, where they viewed it as a close game, but they can't rule out it was a blowout. I mean, that's sort of talking out of both sides.
Yeah, they do. They never, I don't know why reporters even ask these kind of questions. They never answer speculative questions. You know, what if? It's like, don't even waste your breath. It's not, they're never going to answer that. So
what I find interesting is the recency bias thing, because on one hand, I get it. On the other hand, isn't it supposed to be how well you're playing right now? Like,
well, they talk body of work. That's the other
thing. I know. I was going to say that. I don't remember body of work being mentioned as much over the past, whatever, 7 years of this as it was last night. I mean, body of work. They definitely are looking at body of work, which I think helps Ohio State.
It does. I mean, look, they had all 11 of their wins was by double digits. They have a win over Penn State. They have a win over Notre Dame. Their body of work is strong. They laid an egg in the biggest game, in the last game. And you know, and another year, let's say TCU had lost that game. Was it to Baylor, or they had to kick, you know, it was a miracle win for them in a way. You're having a different conversation now. You know, on the other hand, if LSU doesn't lose last week and maybe Clemson doesn't lose last week, you got other kind of teams you got to worry about. You know, now it's just Ohio State needs essentially one of those teams to falter.
I think it was a big deal for Ohio State, too, that Penn State rose as far up as they did. Penn State is now ranked eighth, and I think if the committee were to try to take a 10,000 view of Ohio State's schedule, that win over Penn State on the road, Happy Valley, 100,000 people, a team that they view as the eighth best team in college football, I think is a pretty good win. And it's probably the second or third best win that any team has had in the country this year. I think you would say Michigan has the best win over anybody, beating Ohio State as badly as they did in Columbus. Then you could say maybe Tennessee's win at home over Alabama, or you would say Ohio State's win at Penn State. So I think that's going to be the interesting thing for Ohio State, is when you get down to comparing their resume versus what TCU's could end up being if TCU were to stumble or USC, Ohio State's top end of the resume, I think a win over Notre Dame, a win over Penn State, those look good. I think the case for TCU would then be they play in a pretty deep league. 8 out of the 10 teams in the Big 12 I read are going to go bowling this year. So it's that is a big deal for them to go undefeated through their league. And USC's had – Pac-12 has been a better league this year. So for them to win that league would be – impressive as well. But I think the top end of Ohio State's resume is good. Obviously, it's got a being dragged down by the weight of that loss to Michigan, too.
I'm just looking at TCU's schedule.
strength of schedule, number one.
If TC was it?
It's number one among the teams.
But I'm looking at the scores too. If TCU wins, they're in. If TCU wins, they're in. And if it's a close loss, I have no issue with them getting in. But I'm just Colorado's terrible. Tarleton, who cares? SMU, they won by 8. They blew out Oklahoma when Oklahoma was bad. Beat Kansas by 7. Beat Oklahoma State by 3. Beat Kansas State by 10. Beat West Virginia by 10. Beat Texas Tech by 10. Beat Texas by 7. The Baylor game, 29-28. And they blew out a bad Iowa State team. So if they have not, dominated opponents like Ohio State. Again, I have no issue with them getting in, even with a narrow loss.
Let's look at Ohio State's opponents.
Oh, we know that.
And I think
it's the case for TCU.
They blew them out.
But they blew them out because they were so bad.
Well, some of these teams that TCU struggled with aren't great.
Well, let me just say this. I see what you guys are saying, and I agree for the most part, but we also watch Penn State. I don't think Penn State, if they're number 8 in the nation, this is a down year in college football, which I think is true. Penn State was not good. After that game, we said, they're not very good. Well, nobody said that was a good team. They weren't, and they were home. And all I'm saying is maybe they've improved, but – yeah, and that's a quality win. Why? Because it's Penn State. We saw that team. That team was not great. It has some talent.
Right.
Quarterback, well, not very good.
They're a number 12 team in an average year.
That's what I'm saying. Georgia. I mean, Georgia is for a number one team, Georgia's gotten talked about less than about any team I can remember. Maybe, and as defending champions, maybe just people assume, well, they're that good. They're not real flashy, maybe.
Well, Georgia has not played a marquee game this year. Their schedule has been down, and I think that's maybe hurt them a little bit. They haven't had really the stage that Alabama has had, where you've played LSU and you played Tennessee, and granted, Alabama lost both of those games. But Georgia hasn't had that top 10 billing of a game where you have all the attention on them. I did think it was interesting that they stayed ahead of Michigan, because I think Michigan has a pretty good case to be number one in the country. If you're an Ohio State fan sitting at home wondering, I mean, some of this may not ultimately matter, but I do think it would be better for the Buckeyes if Michigan just rolled Purdue in the Big Ten title game, and maybe Georgia looks unconvincing against LSU, because – if the committee is going to take a generous view of Ohio State's loss to Michigan, obviously it would help if Michigan was viewed as the number one team in the country. So that's just, I guess, my comment on the Wolverine.
I don't know who said it on the playoff reveal show. Maybe it was Joey Galloway. But I think the reason the committee didn't put Michigan number one, because they could make a claim, is because that non-conference schedule is so weak that if you put them number one, you're telling everybody, why should we schedule anybody that's decent? Just get to the end with no losses.
Yeah, I heard that. And maybe it was Pollock who said that. I don't remember which analyst did bring up that point, but I guess I don't understand drawing the distinction between a conference and a non-conference schedule. I mean, the SEC plays 8 conference games. I mean, why should the SEC – why are you penalizing a league that plays 9 conference games too? So,
I'm saying the teams that Michigan played were horrendous.
But I don't get why they're drawing a distinction between out of conference and conference.
Because you can schedule your – you can choose to make life a little tougher on yourself out of conference. Yeah.
And you can also choose to make your conference schedule tougher, and which is what the Big Ten does and the SEC does not.
Well, by just playing one more game?
Yeah.
But if those teams are terrible, like they are in the Big Ten, yes, it's one more conference game. But I guess what I'm saying is
– it's one more conference game in lieu of what the SEC does, is the SEC plays 8 conference games, and that extra conference game, instead of playing that extra conference game, you're playing some directional school.
Exactly.
Down south.
Listen, Ohio State scheduled Notre Dame. They've got Michigan scheduled nobody.
I think Michigan was supposed to play UCLA,
which would have helped them, because UCLA would be a ranked non conference win right now. It's helping USC.
That's if they won. It didn't hurt them because they didn't lose. They didn't play. They haven't lost. The other thing I thought was interesting from the committee last night, before we move on, is they talked about Michigan not moving ahead. You know, they said something like it wasn't enough to move them past Georgia. Well, I thought, and they have always said this, we start with a blank slate every week. Yeah, we start
they
from
didn't, they didn't say that, week. Did they?
No. They're like, well, you have to basically, you have to knock out the king. You knock out the champion. Well, that's not the way they've always said they approach it. They start from scratch. Look, you compare the resumes. You compare, I mean, yes, Georgia has the big win over Oregon in the opener. It was a dominating win, even more so than Michigan's over Ohio State, much more so. But other than that, I mean, but just the way that he used that phrase, they didn't do enough to overtake Georgia. Well, it shouldn't be overtaking. It should be blank slate, and whoever's better is better.
Well, yeah, of course, if you do that, Ohio State might be like eighth right now.
Right?
They wouldn't be fifth.
No, they would. I'm saying you look at the whole body of work each week. That's what they're supposed to do. Say, okay.
No, I don't know if there's a supposed to. I think Joey had it. Like every new group comes in and has a little different slant on how they're going to do things. Maybe that's bad. I don't know.
But this group even said that. And
what?
This group has even said in weeks past, we start from scratch every week.
Yeah.
Well, they clearly didn't this week, or at least they didn't when it came to Michigan and Georgia. Again, no big deal. They're both in. It's not going to matter. It's just – I just thought
that was it matters from this standpoint, the game, too, if Ohio State gets in. Ohio State almost certainly will be four. I still have a hard time seeing how they get to three, even if Armageddon's, So let's say they're four. Well, if Michigan blows out Purdue and Georgia has a close game, guess what? The game two, it's on.
LSU beats Georgia. How about that?
Yeah, that's right. And then then Georgia drops to what, three?
Yeah, two or three.
Depending what else happens, of course. I mean,
They're not going to drop to four. I would be surprised if they dropped to four, Georgia.
Right. And who knows? They could only drop to two if USC
and TCU lose. Uniform color.
Yeah. Anyhow, I think – I don't know what the percentage is that we'll see a rematch game, but 25%? Well – the problem here is that I don't know. You first have to start with SC losing. I don't know what the chances are that.
I'd say 25%.
You think? I would put a little higher, maybe.
I'd put a little higher than that. A
little higher. It's neutral, 35. And
then or TCU 40%. Losing big is probably 10%. Losing big enough for Ohio State to jump them is probably 10%.
Yeah, both of the games that TCU and USC have are essentially coin flip games. And Utah plays well against USC. It'll be in Vegas. I think that'll be a neutral site, but I think there could be. I don't know if there'll be more Utah fans, but it'll be just
USC has more to play for. So obviously
Utah is playing for another trip to the Rose Bowl, though. And based on how they came out to that game last year, I think they do care about that. And I think generally Utah likes beating USC. That's against a game they take seriously.
The cultural thing. I think.
Yeah.
Especially, and I'll tell you, USC leaving the conference has given more incentive to. I mean, the rest of the conference is not happy with USC.
Well, I think Utah fashions itself as sort of the blue collar program of the Pac-12, and USC, especially right now, is very in their minds more Hollywood, more NIL based, more transfer based. So it's a little bit of a clash of styles there. So I think Utah will care. I think Utah has quite a bit at stake for that game.
Well, let me just say this. I talked to two hardcore Michigan fans the last 2 days. They want no part of a rematch.
No, they don't.
No part of a rematch. And yet there's a little part of them that welcomes it, because if they did win again, the agony that they would put upon Buckeye Nation and on Ryan Day. I mean, Day is already under fire, but if he loses again to them, wow. So I think talking to them, they feel not that they got lucky in that game, but most of the things went their way. And both these guys, who I do respect their opinion, they really came down hard on Ohio State coaching, which we don't want to really visit Michigan too much, but the over-aggressive Jim Knowles defense, not just on the pass and the broken tackles, but later in the game, all through the game, and Ryan Day's offense, it's like they just got fooled. Ohio State, Michigan did things that Ohio State wasn't either ready for or didn't think would do. And then Ohio State tries to go into this man coverage. If there's any indictment of the whole thing, I think in some ways that man coverage, I don't know.
With the corners they have right now and the way that they've been injured and not
exactly
playing.
Right.
Like the jump pass from the running back.
Yeah.
All 11 guys were within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. All 11 guys. So that when they threw the pass, there was nobody there because they all came up to play the run because they were so close anyway. So there was no chance that that play wouldn't work unless the pass was even worse than it was. And if it had been any kind of decent pass, it would have been a touchdown.
I'll just throw this out because somebody sent it to me. Go back and look at Jim Knowles. Look at Oklahoma State's the scores in the Bedlam game against Oklahoma.
In their big rivalry.
It's not kind to Jim Knowles. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, his career arc at Oklahoma State was, I think, a little different than what we've seen at Ohio State. I mean, that was a slow rebuild.
What I'm saying is in a rivalry game.
I know, but these defenses were not just generally in the first couple of years not very good at Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have the players there.
All right, let's move on to
viewer mail.
Yeah, we solicited some subscriber questions, which we're going to get into. I think that just about sums up our playoff segment of the podcast. Basically, I think we're all in agreement. Ohio State's got a better than the decent shot. If USC loses, it's more iffy. If TCU loses, but it's at least a conversation. That's basically their playoff path this weekend. This is the scenario to root for, but we'll take some subscriber cues. We solicited the text messages out, and we got a few. So let's get to them. I think injuries, it seemed like, was the top of mind for a few folks. Let's take this one from Dustin. He says, injuries, I don't get the feeling that our players are being played at times that I can see as a fan that benefits us when they aren't 100%. JSN against Toledo, why not hold a guy with a hamstring injury out longer? And he only pushed to come back with 100% or against an opponent like Penn State. Why is Henderson coming out and playing when not 100% against Maryland, then comes out after the Team of North week and says he has torn ligaments and a broken bone in his foot? I don't think he changes the game completely, but optics would change on his injury, at least from my perspective. I do get that some injuries can't get worse, but some of the decisions when to play make a difference and could let a player be better prepared. I do think injuries is an interesting thing to start because I think when you take a 10,000 view of Ohio State's season, that kind of overhangs quite a bit on offense. Jackson Smith and Chigwell essentially missed all the regular season with the hamstring injury. And Travion, certainly what he revealed on Twitter was of note, and Maya Williams being banged up. So I guess what did y'all think about that this year?
I think it's a legitimate point. I think that, you know, with Travion Henderson saying he had the ligaments and broken bone in a foot right now, I mean, it's hard to imagine a running back being able to do anything. So, football is a violent, brutal game, and you're never really healthy after the first day of training camp. I mean, that's just the nature of the sport. But there's a difference between hurt and injured. And if a player's injured, he shouldn't be playing. I mean, I do think that we thought at the time that Jackson Smith and Jigba coming back when he did just seemed like, why risk it? We said that at the time. And so I think that's a legitimate thing. And the other thing is, you know, you don't want, just for their own welfare, these players to be hurt. I mean, it's just not smart for them. I don't think it's smart for the team. Again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how serious the injuries actually are, obviously. But if the player, Travion in his case, says this is what I had, that's legitimate criticism.
It seems to have been an issue at times last year because we remember C.J. Stroud playing against Tulsa.
Yep.
They separated joint in his throwing shoulder, and he finally rested the following week against Akron. But the only reason he rested was because CJ's mom told CJ that you should sit out. And CJ went to Ryan Day and said, I think I should sit out. And and Ryan Day agree. So that was a move that was triggered by the player, not the coaching staff. And I think that is a real question for them moving forward. Is they doesn't seem like they have the right feel for when guys are coming back, and maybe they come back too soon and that sort of thing. And it's hard for us to know all the particulars because we don't get a lot of injury information that's up front, and you're getting a lot of stuff well after the fact, or you're not getting maybe a full picture, but it feels like the staff doesn't really have the feel that they need to have with these guys.
Yeah. And the Trivion thing's problematic because it can be used against them in a recruiting situation. Like, here's a guy that was hurt and you played him, and you know, whatever opponent in the Big Ten or elsewhere can throw that out there, right? You know, whether it's false, real, that whole thing.
All right. We, you know, we give credit to the question. What's the next question?
All right. We got that one through. I think this is one that was also injuries seem to be one that was of interest, and as well as Ryan Day's play calling, which I think is now coming up. David C. asks, do you think Coach Day needs to see play calling to someone else? And he does script stuff with Kevin Wilson. It's not as if Ryan Day is going at it solo. Those guys are involved in playing throughout the week. But I think that's a question folks want to know, especially after they gave up or they scored on 3 points in the second half against Michigan. What do you guys make of Ryan Day relinquishing some of the offensive play calling?
I think it, you know, pry it from his cold, dead hands is maybe one thought I had. Look, when you have 75 plays in a game, there are always going to be a few you can second guess. I mean, I think the first fourth down to Cade Stover, the one that dropped off his hands, that seemed to be a lower percentage pass than you'd like to have in that situation. I think it was fourth and two. I mean, if you're not going to run it, have a little crossing pattern to Marvin Harrison. I mean, that's where not having Jackson Smith and Jigba really hurt them this year. Those kind of plays where even if he's not the target, defenses have to assume he's the target. And so it makes everything else tougher when he's not there. That to me was a strange play call. You know, there are a few others, but look, Ohio State had the second highest scoring average in the country, I think, this year. I didn't even, maybe the first, I don't remember what that. I don't know what Tennessee.
I believe it slipped after Saturday.
Okay. They were second going in the game by literally 1 point. They're 1 point behind Tennessee.
Now they're shade behind Tennessee.
Okay. So, you know, he's not a bad play caller. I mean, the guy kind of knows what he's doing. Again, I think sometimes he gets a little cute. I think the Stover pass was a little too cute. But all in all, I would say that's not foremost among their problems.
Yeah, I don't see him relinquishing it. It would be a situation, I'm guessing, where he's forced to.
And who's going to force him to? I mean,
well, it happens. It happens. The boss. It's happened at other places. You know, it happens in the NFL. It happens where the GM, in this case, Gene Smith, steps in and says, well, "Let's talk about this." I'm not sure that is the issue either. You know, I will say this. I'm starting to wonder now about the blowout scoring. Like, so what, in a sense? I mean, so you win 50-14. Does that really say that you're unstoppable, or does it say that, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's maybe as important as I've thought it was. It kind of impresses you, but what's the difference between winning by 3 touchdowns and 5 touchdowns, in a sense? That sounds goofy, I know, but in light of the last two Michigan games, I'm kind of wondering.
I think this is also a item to consider as well, is if there is all of a sudden now a groundswell. Groundswell is probably the wrong way to put it, but maybe a thought among some segment of the fan base whether Ryan Day should give up play calling. If Ryan Day were to give up play calling, then why exactly is Ryan Day your coach? Because that is the whole point of Ryan Day being the Ohio State football coach, was that he was Lincoln Riley-esque. He was a brilliant offensive mind who had good people skills and maybe a softer touch than Urban. That, I mean, that was the big draw to ensuring that he was going to be your coach moving forward, because he could recruit the quarterback position and he could throw the ball and design an offense that could push the ball down the field vertically. If you don't feel you can count on that part of him as a coach, then why is he your coach? So I think you're taking away what his, I think, strongest asset that he would bring to the program leading forward would be the vertical passing game. So I think that gets into a larger existential question. But to me, that's why I think you do try to make it work for him as a play caller going forward, because that's his strength. It's one of his best qualities. It's why you have him as the coach in the first place. It's a big reason why Ohio State's been 45-5 over his tenure. I think that the play calling question is almost separate. I don't think he's maybe had his best play calling days in the rivalry against Michigan, and maybe it's an approach to the rivalry. But I think you look at the other 42 games he's coached at Ohio State, I think maybe there are fewer questions about that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I have no real problem with the play calling. I think it could be a little more creative. When was the last time you saw Ohio State try a jump pass? I mean, that kind of stuff. It's a head scratcher to me what happened late in the season. It seemed like the Marv, and maybe it's just, you know, they have opponents that have Ohio State on film, and they keep defending him better and better and better, and with more tape to watch. You know, the Marvin Harrison deep slant just kind of disappeared. So what was going on there? Was it just coverage, different coverages? It just seemed like things kind of bogged down. And I know the one game was the wind game, so that's kind of a throw that one out, sort of. I don't know. That's the issue I have maybe overall, is like Ohio State's last three games, Northwestern, Maryland, and Michigan, they didn't look like world beaters. So that was not a positive trend to me. And I said this maybe on the last podcast, I almost felt that Ryan Day kind of knew that. That may be just me reading something that's not there. Could be. But I just felt like he kind of knew they were in for a challenge against Michigan, of course.
Well, Maryland was, in hindsight especially, a red flag, or at least a yellow flag, because, you know, they gave them all they could handle. And I don't think that they ever really found their groove in the run game. I don't know why this offensive line, very good in pass protection, didn't maul people in the run game. You know, there were times they took over the game. There were times, but not consistently. And that, to me, you know, some of it's the injuries to the running backs. I mean, if Trayvon Henderson is playing at 50% or 60%, and Mike Williams is dealing with what he's dealing with, that's going to affect things. I mean, Trayvon's longest run this year was 41 yards. It's Trayvon Henderson. I mean, you know, so I think the run game was not as consistent as they'd like. And then because the passing game was so good, they feel, okay, we'll just rely on that. Who's going to stop that? Well, Michigan is, kind of.
Bill, it's a broken record. We've talked about it. It's trending into a Big 12 team.
Yeah.
And
hard to argue.
Yeah, it's just –
and I tell you what, next year – not we'll do a plenty of time talking about next year, but you look at who they lose on the offensive line, you know, three players for sure, both tackles and Matthew Jones and possibly Luke Whipler. You got Donovan Jackson back.
Why Luke Whipler? He's
a junior. He could be gone. It's his third year.
He's a redshirt sophomore. That's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with him, but he could go. You got major concerns on the offensive line. I mean, you don't have a stud coming. I mean, Paris Johnson is a five-star guy. You don't have those right now. And so that's going to be a real issue next year. Justin Fry's got his work cut out for him to make this offensive line what it needs to be, because even this year's offensive line was probably a little bit better on paper than it was in reality. It was a good offensive line, but I don't know that it was as good as we thought it would be consistently.
With you there.
What's the next question, Joey?
I mean, we need some chimes music, segue in each
question. Grab the guitar and play a little something. Go ahead. I'm not going to.
That's a risk. I think these next two questions could almost be combined, so I'll just read both off. One is asked by Ian M. What is your take on why OSU's defense surrendered so many big plays? ? The other is, why have our defensive backs been burnt all year long? Is it Jim Knowles' scheme for the backs to play off the way they do, or is it the players themselves? It just seems they're always getting beat. I do think these dovetail, and especially in the Michigan game, I think part of it was a gamble on some of the play calling on Jim Knowles' part to bring as much pressure as they did, and things then broke down in coverage. But I think it's partly twofold. I think there's always going to be a risk element to Jim Knowles' play calling, where he wants to be aggressive and he's going to take some shots and the way he brings pressure. And then also you look at the cornerbacks. I mean, that was, I think, one of their weakest positions in terms of depth they had. It was affected by injuries more so than any other position on the roster. You had, outside of Denzel Burke, who had his own injury issues, that other cornerback spot was sort of a rotating door between J.K. Johnson, Cam Brown, and then Jordan Hancock getting a little healthier late in the season after his hamstring injury. I think two issues combined. I think if Jim Knowles' defense maybe has some more consistent bodies at a corner, that helps a lot. But I think that's why they're certainly giving up big plays in the back end.
This, you know, Ohio State got spoiled by having this string of first round corners forever. I mean, since Urban Meyer got there and Kerry Combs was recruiting them, I mean, it's just an incredible list. It dried up, you know, last year. We actually started, you know, Sean Wade was supposed to be that guy a couple years ago, wasn't. Last year, you know, Denzel Burke was a major surprise in a good way, but he had a sophomore slump this year, partly because of injuries. Cam Brown was a disappointment. Jordan Hancock was hurt a lot. You know, they were down to what, a few, maybe three healthy scholarship players at one point. So
yeah, that was for the Wisconsin game. They had three healthy scholarship corners.
So you'd like to think that a coordinator would work around that and know his strengths and weaknesses and not put Cam Brown on an island on a full blitz. So, and the other time, Denzel Burke got burnt on the first Michigan drive where they got a field goal, just got lost, slipped or whatever. You know, I don't understand why Cam Martinez is the only guy deep on the second touchdown pass, and he wasn't even close to Cornelius Johnson. It's a legitimate criticism. I mean, I think Jim Knowles is a really bright guy. I think he did overall, their defense was much better than it was last year. But at crucial times, it broke down, and the quarterback play all year was a problem. There were just no good quarterbacks that they faced that could really exploit it. I mean, let's face it. They played three good quarterbacks all year, right? And, you know, and even their little
– you could say J.J. McCarthy, Talia Tagovailoa,
and Daquan Finn.
And I'd throw in Sean Clifford too. So four.
Okay, yeah, Sean Clifford.
I mean there were times against Penn State where they were beat deep. And in a lot of ways – The script of Ohio State, Penn State mirrored Michigan without the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
The first three quarters were pretty similar. Yeah.
The fourth quarter flipped. Instead of Ohio State taking control, you know, Michigan did.
But in Penn State, I mean, they had those plays first, second quarter. They gave up some big ones where there was busted coverage and Penn State took advantage. So you're right. There were cracks in the foundation all year. Just if Ohio State was playing in the Pac-12 – instead of the Big Ten, I think it'd be more likely to be exposed, and they were. It's a big issue for them going forward. They didn't really address cornerback at all in the transfer portal last year. Maybe they will this year. Their recruiting at that position generally, I think, needs to improve from the standpoint of depth and also playmakers. But you do have some younger guys who you hope, I think, would take a leap moving forward between Denzel Burke, J.K. Johnson, Jordan Hancock, all those guys were second-year players. So that's where things stand there. Also dovetailing into this, Jason C. asks, what short-term changes do the Buckeyes make up to shore the pass in-game defense?
I think we answered it.
Yeah,
I think you could have heard better. Here's the thing. I think what's sad, and how, when they look at tape and when they rethink this, Ohio State could have played vanilla defense and probably wins the game. They just play the defense they play all year. Right. Just even with the secondary they had, just do what you've been doing, and you probably win the game.
Michigan had one sustained scoring touchdown drive. One sustained. They had the 15-play, 80-yard drive that spanned the third and fourth quarters. Every other one was a big play.
They overthought it. Maybe they overplanned it. I don't know.
Norris thought he had to earn his money kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
It always felt like they were searching for that kill shot on defense. That's how that all-out blitz felt. Like the game was on the cusp of turning. You just needed to have that one big play, that big sack, that strip sack. It felt like they were pressing maybe a little bit too much. And I think I'm sure Jim Knowles would want some of those calls back.
Yep.
All right. Next question.
All right.
Next question. Who are you, John Tortorella?
These are torts. These are speculative next year.
Okay.
Someone wants to know, what is the speculation from Bill C? What is the speculation on whether Jackson Smith and Jigba comes back or goes pro next year?
I think it depends if they get in the playoff, right? I mean, if they get in the playoff, maybe he comes back. And I think that's still a pretty big
deal. He's talking about next year.
I thought you were talking about this year.
Well, this year, I'm not sure he comes back.
Well, I think it's basically is Jackson Smith and Jigba a Bosa or a Garrett Wilson where they go, they don't play in the bowl game, or is he Chris Olave where he shocks everybody and comes back to school?
I would be very surprised if he comes back. The only reason that he would come back is if he gets some kind of grade from the NFL that says you're not going to be a first-round pick, because he was a sure number one pick going into the year. I think if he played any amount, he would be – if cemented that. I just can't imagine that he would come back next year.
I'm not sure he is. He's not a guaranteed first-round pick, and just talking to some of the people that
well, – maybe now because he didn't play.
Exactly. He didn't prove some things that maybe he needed to prove. But, again, they could use him, but that's where they're stacked the most, I would say, is at wide receiver. So I'd be shocked if he came back.
Yeah, I mean, Julian Fleming is technically eligible to go to the NFL too. I don't think – I mean, I think he's not ready. I'd be surprised if he went. You have Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka back for sure. Jaden Ballard, you'd like to think, is ready to make that jump next year. They've got some other young guys. You got some five-star guys coming. I mean, that's not a position of need. But I do think, you know, all year I thought they really didn't need Smith and Jigba. The Michigan game, and I think the Maryland game, it would have really helped. It would have helped just those short yardage deals and just spreading. You know, they couldn't key on Marvin Harrison the way that they were obviously able to do. I mean, people who kind of are down on Ohio State, remember they lost probably two of their three biggest weapons this year, going into the year that you thought they would have. Didn't have Jackson Smith and Jigba really at all. And you had a very diminished Travion Henderson because of the injuries. And those were Heisman contenders, not prime contenders, but they were on the list. And you really got, I mean, Travion ran for 600 some yards. That's it. I mean, I thought he was going to run for 1,500. You know, and if he'd been healthy, who knows what he might have done. And so, you know, I know every team has injuries, but most teams don't lose two of their three top playmakers.
Yeah, I think it's more of a who than the it's more of a, the quality of the injuries, the players who were hurt, rather than maybe just the sheer numbers for all those guys. For as far as Jackson coming back, it is interesting that it's never been entertained because, as Rob points out, he's not a surefire NFL first round pick to be top 15 guy. Like Marvin Harris Jr., when he comes out next year, I think he's going to be talked about as a potential top 10 pick.
Number one pick. Well, he won't be number one, but he might be like two, three.
Right. He's supposed to go really high. I don't think that's the case for Jackson. And outside of the 21 season, he hasn't played a ton in college because his freshman year was the COVID year in 20, and you just didn't get a lot of game reps. And he was a backup that year. Then barely played at all this year. But I do wonder if the way Ohio State handled his injury would make him, I think, more hesitant to come back. The fact that he had so many stops and starts, and how did he feel about that whole situation, about never really maybe being put in the best situation to return? And that was the case. Maybe only he knew what his ability was. But I think you have to consider that element as well. How happy was he with Ohio State and the way they managed his hamstring injury?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, unfortunately, it's pretty likely he's played his last game for Ohio State. And honestly, I think if C.J. Stroud, if they don't make the playoff, I would guess that C.J. Stroud won't play in the bowl game too. So, it's not really the question, but if they go to a non-CFP bowl game, it's not going to be the roster that we've seen, or at least the starting lineup we've seen.
It'll be a 23 exhibition.
Yes, it'll be an audition for 2023. The Kyle McCord show and maybe Devin Brown.
Dana D asks, our second to last question here, will Ryan Day to NFL rumors start again?
They're always going to start. I think they're going to start. I don't think they've ever stopped, honestly. I think that Ryan Day would not want to leave Ohio State, having lost two in a row to Michigan. I think he's generally happy here. I think that Gene Smith and Ohio State's generally happy with him. Two straight losses to Michigan ain't good. But I would say, the thing that I want to say this carefully. There's more to life than winning football games, and I know last year that there was stuff that happened behind the scenes in terms of some of the criticism out by the fan base toward people was not good, and I think that as long as it's not over the top, he'll be back and would be happy to be back.
It's always going to be over the top. It's always been over the top, and it's not worse now. I mean, there's social media.
Social media makes it worse.
But you know what you're signing up for. I don't have a whole lot of sympathy on that end of things.
I'm not talking about criticism directing at the coach himself. That's fine. Say whatever you want. But when it goes to beyond that.
Sure. Here's what I would say. What I would say is that Ryan Day looks ahead and is probably really hoping, as a lot of coaches are, that this 12-team playoff gets here in 2024, not 2026. Because there's two – that was a good sound effect there. Because 2024, he can lose a game. This whole thing, you're not allowed to lose a game. You could lose two games. You might be able to lose three games, depending who you are. Maybe not. So it's a little more like the NFL that way, a little more. So if you can just get it to 2024, which I think he can, I mean, that may mean having to put up with another loss to Michigan up there next year. But that he's smart enough to know it will get better, because it'll get easier.
Well, Ryan Day has talked about this as well. Late, it was just a couple of weeks ago, where I think it was after the Northwestern game, the idea of having almost two different philosophies and offensive philosophies. You have a philosophy that can win in the Big Ten and against Michigan, and then you have your other offensive philosophy to win in a college football playoff, sort of the offense that you need to beat Big Ten teams and the offense you need to beat the teams from the South. I think the challenge is unique if you're a Big Ten power in that way. Well, with an expanded playoff field, I think his offense in the playoff his offense is probably more suited to that environment than maybe it's been against Michigan. So I think that gives him a chance. And he's somebody who's been an advocate for the college football playoff expansion as well. The idea of just this one loss can totally cripple your season and everything collapses, I think is hard on any coach. And he's somebody who came up playing in the FCS in New Hampshire, where that's not the FBS style. You get to play in a playoff. That's 16 team playoff. So
The other thing is he came up in the through the coaching ranks where a lot of the places he was at, a 500 season was pretty good. You know, I mean, you go to the NFL, you know you're going to lose a minimum of four games, probably closer to six or seven, and it's okay. I mean, watching like last week, the Ohio State game on Saturday, then the Bengals play on Sunday, the Browns play on Sunday, and I'm watching the Bengals, and you know, if they lose, it's okay. Who we got next week? You know, in college, as Daya said, it's March Madness from the start. And I think that it just takes such a toll. And I think, honestly, it did not help Ohio State this year, in hindsight, that they put everything on this game. I do think that Michigan was a looser team on Saturday. I think Ohio State, especially when things started to go south. I think they were fine in the first half. But when things started to unravel in the fourth quarter especially, really at the drive with the penalty, with the G. Scott penalty, and then the botched fake field goal, and things started to go south, I think that all of the weight that had been on them for an entire year came crashing on them mentally. And I think that's in part what happened at the end, that they, I can't believe this is happening again, mindset set in. And it all just came crashing down on them. Whereas Michigan goes in there and, you know, kind of quietly confident, and they didn't have the pressure. I mean, the way they digs, if they lose, they're not going to get in the playoff. But I think that it was just, you could just tell there was a different feel on the sidelines.
That's the full circle question as we wrap up. Do we have more questions, Joey?
Just one.
Okay, let me just throw this out. That's the full circle thing, Bill, right? You spend 12 months with competitive stamina, and then right. To see it fall apart in 30 minutes, it's like, wait a minute. We went back to the drawing board last year. Leadership, new leadership councils, and this and that, toughness, edge. And for what? So what do you do now? Do you just figure out it was just a one-off, or do you realize, two-off? I mean, we haven't really – this is for another podcast, but we haven't really gotten into the personalities of coaching. You know, somebody said the other day, Jim Tressel was your pastor. Urban Meyer was the bad dad who had a bad day at work. And you were, you know, you didn't want to cross him. And Ryan Day is your favorite uncle. You know, it's just a little bit of just kind of not that he can't talk toughness or that he's a soft guy. I don't mean that. I just mean that. And I don't know how much that plays into it. I think there's like 400 things that play into a season. And that's one of them. Anyhow, what's the next question?
I'll just add to that. I think it's hard to maybe – we're not in the meeting rooms. We're not in the building. We're not embedded with the team in that.
They should let us in.
love to be a fly on the wall. But I think that makes it hard to maybe fully evaluate their approach year round of the game. We know what they tell us, but we only see so much. And I do think what's revealed itself in the game – between Ohio State and Michigan the last 2 years, just a team that feels too wound up in a way, just the way they've committed penalties, the way a lot of those penalties have been, I think, inexplicable or inexcusable ones too, two personal foul penalties in the second half. So whatever, I guess, they're coaching and preaching and talking about in the lead up to the game, it's resulting in the team that it draws too many yellow flags and looks like an undisciplined team against Michigan. Let's tackle our final question from Chris W. It's a long one, but maybe this will, I think, bring out an interesting thing to chew on to end this one. Chris W. asks, what is there to look forward to? He seems fairly despondent. playoff this year is unlikely. Bowl game with many opt-outs is likely. The offensive line and secondary look very suspect for next year. OSU paid $2 million for a defensive coordinator who gave up more points to Michigan than last year. Could easily go 7-5 next season with road games at Notre Dame, Purdue, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Back-to-back seasons without any trophies or signature victories. Unfortunately, the program is trending in the wrong direction. I'm not advocating to fire Day or Knowles, but unless they beat Michigan next year, they should be dismissed. So I thought we would turn to Rob Aller to
This is a wrong question.
What's his name again?
Chris. I don't think
it's Grandma O.
Chris. I'm sure you're going to get some really nice holiday gifts. just enjoy the season, Chris. Don't worry about next year. Today has enough problems of its own. Take a deep breath, Chris. And
you sound like Stuart Smalley here.
It's going to be okay, Chris. Step away from the ledge. And it's a game. Do I believe that 100%? Not really. But you have to tell yourself that, Chris.
Look, Ohio State is still, you know, they're not going anywhere. I mean, the Ohio State's not going to be
down.
They're not going to become the 3-9 Rich Rodriguez team. I mean, there's too much talent. There's too much commitment to, I've always said if Ohio State ever went 3-9, grown men would jump out of buildings. So, you know, people, they're 11-1 and people are, you know, walking toward the ledge a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, are there, but to your question, are there legitimate concerns? Yes, of course. I mean, you are going to lose CJ Stroud unless he shocks everybody by coming back. I mean, that would be the shocker. That would make Chris Olave coming back look like nothing. You are going to lose some key. I mentioned the offensive line. That's going to have to be mostly rebuilt. You are going to have to replace some key defensive players. Zach Harrison's gone. Tommy Eichenberg might be gone. I mean, they're going to lose some pieces. Ronnie Hickman's already said he's gone. So, there are going to be some questions. I don't think that next year Ohio State will be the preseason favorite in the Big Ten. I think Michigan will be. J.J. McCarthy's back. They've got Donovan Edwards is back. That's going to be a good team. Doesn't mean they can't win it. Ohio State's been the favorite and hasn't won it. So yes, there are your concerns are legitimate concerns, and Ohio State has to make some fixes. Remember, there is a transfer portal now. So Michigan went out and got a center last year, in the offseason who was really good. Ohio State, if they lose some people, there'll be plenty of players who would clamor to play for Ohio State. So there can be some quick fixes. But yeah, I think this is This is a bit of a crossroads for Ohio State right now.
I do think, Bill, what you said about the transfer portal is good to keep in mind, because if you are a football team like Ohio State that is looking to reload, and even for teams who are looking to rebuild, that process is now sped up. I think the off seasons in college football are a lot longer than they were in the past, because you can do a lot more to supplement your roster. So I think looking ahead to next year, I think is still too early, because we don't really have a good idea yet who's going to be playing for the Buckeyes yet in terms of who they could maybe add through the portal, or who's even put their names in the portal across the country. You look at USC, where they were a year ago. They were 4-8. They went to 11-1 in the regular season with 50 new players. And I don't think Ohio State's going to dip into the portal a ton under Ryan Day unless they really alter that strategy. And there's been no sign of that happening. But that's going to be, I think, maybe one hope you would have is they would maybe fix some issues there. I do think Jim Knowles' defense from his time at Oklahoma State made incremental progress year to year. So I think there's reason to believe that they could certainly take another leap forward on that side of the ball, especially if they get closer to a full complement of guys and cornerback and elsewhere in the secondary. But I think it's the reason for positive. And hey, story on this season isn't written yet either. We'll see where the Buckeyes ultimately end up in the college football playoff rankings, and if they get another crack at Michigan.
Exactly. Let me say that to Chris to leave him with some hope, Chris. USC could lose to Utah. Ohio State gets in the playoff, gets a second shot at that team up north.
that'll make for a great chapter.
That will make for a great chapter in Bill's book. Maybe
all right. I'll write it. Okay. If that happens and Ohio State wins the national championship, I'll write the damn book again. I'll write another one. Okay. The trilogy.
Chris, he'll give acknowledgments to Chris. You'll be in Bill's book.
Because I mean, you guys have razzed me all year about this. And I've said to Joey, what book is there to write? I mean, every game is boring. I mean,
I got the title.
What's that?
Backed in.
Buckeye backdoor.
Buckeye backdoor. Buckeye backdoor. There it is. There it is. All right. Have a good one.
I'm glad this will only heighten the drama of Buckeye Backdoor by Bill Rabinowitz.
Jeez.
Thanks for listening. Who do you say goodbye, Grandma O?
Are we going to close out with that?
In the meantime. Hail to
the victors, she says.
Wow.
She's
feisty.
Yeah, she's feisty. 94-year-old feist, just in case. Okay, you heard it here first. Thanks for listening.
Wow.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.